be a superhero, but if that doesn't work out, I will be an engineer.
When I grow up, I want to be a chef because I like ice cream.
I want to be a basketball player.
I want to be a jet pilot so I can take people to really fun places.
I want to be a drug addict.
Get to your kids before drugs do. Arm yourself with the facts. Get your free The Truth About Drugs booklet set today. Go to drugfreeworld.org.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be. So we asked kids, what do you want your parents to hear?
I feel sometimes that I'm not listened to. I would just want you to listen to me more often and evaluate situations with me and lead me towards success.
We're not adults, so just be there and like listen. I just want someone to yap to, and I just feel like I'll be fine like if someone just hears me talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk.
You're doing a really good job, and I don't think I tell you that enough. And I know sometimes we get into it and it's just hard on both of us, but you know, try to understand me more and I'll try to do the same.
Listening is a form of love. Find resources to help you support your kids and their emotional well-being at soundedouttogether.org. That's soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal.
Hey, everything okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
Honey. Hey, I'm here for you. Tell me about school today.
When kids can't find the right words, music can help them sound it out. Talk to the kids in your life about their emotional well-being. Find tools and resources at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Fishtails, we've got them. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Sinker. Brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. Find them at US 60 in Ashland, Kentucky. Your one-stop shop for all your hunting and fishing needs. Let Borders help you get outdoors. Find them online, BordersSportingGoods.com. I'm Cam Connors, and I think by now it's getting to the point where a lot of us are hearing of folks, or maybe you have had this happen, where all of a sudden they're getting sick from red meat, and it's beef in particular, but I believe pork and lamb and such can be affected as well, but come to find out, it's almost always linking back to a tick bite. And in fact, I actually know someone personally who had this happen to them. So here to talk with me today is an assistant professor of entomology at UK, Dr. Hannah Tiven. Hannah, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So let's jump right in. Right off the bat, what is this red meat allergy that we're seeing pop up?
Yeah, so red meat allergy, also known as alpha-gal syndrome, it's essentially an immune response to a sugar molecule or a carbohydrate molecule that's found in red meat. And it happens because of a tick bite. So the tick bite somehow, you know, puts this molecule into your system, and your immune system has a reaction to it because it thinks it's a foreign body coming from this tick. And then the next time, if you develop this syndrome, then the next time you eat something that has this molecule, such as, you know, eating beef products or other red meat products, then you'll have an allergic reaction.
I see. And you said it's called alpha-gal syndrome, or gal.
Yep, alpha-gal, because that's alpha-gal. The molecule that causes the issue.
So this is just a little bit outside of your expertise, because you are more on the insect side of it.
Yep.
But I've actually heard rumors of folks who have developed this and then slowly over time been able to I guess build up an immunity back towards red meat. Have you heard of anything like that?
Yeah, so I have heard of that. And I'm not sure if it's building up an immunity or if it's more of your immune system becomes a little more tolerant to it. But I have heard plenty of people that have said they had some immune reactions to red meat products or different products like that, and then over time the symptoms got less severe.
Okay, so if somebody were to get this, it's not necessarily, you know, oh, you're never going to eat a steak again.
Right. So it can manifest that way, but in other circumstances, it does go away as well.
Okay. And so you have said that this is transmitted primarily via ticks.
Mm-hmm. So it's caused by a tick bite. The exact mechanisms of how that all happens is not quite clear yet, because this is a relatively new syndrome that we're learning about. But yeah, it's caused by a tick bite. So your best bet in preventing this syndrome is by preventing tick bites.
Okay, and it's primarily the Lone Star tick. Is it like deer ticks or any other ticks, or is it just the Lone Star we're seeing it with?
So in other parts of the world, it can be associated with Ixodes species. So that's our deer tick is an Ixodes species of tick, and a couple other tick species as well. But in the U.S., it's only been confirmed so far with associated with the Lone Star tick.
So because this is like a beef-type protein, would we say that this is something, say, the tick has latched on to, say, a bovine, and then develop this as some sort of then bit a person and developed because of that? Or is it, you know, what I guess what I'm trying to say is there any circumstances that lead to, or, you know, are you more likely to get it if you, you know, get by a tick and you live on a cattle farm?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that we really know that, because we don't fully understand how the tick creates or picks up this molecule in the first place. There's a couple different theories where, you know, these ticks need to feed on three different animals to complete their life stage. So maybe they're picking it up from another animal and then transmitting it to us. But other theories are that it's actually being created kind of in their own gut microbiome. So we don't really know where they're getting it or how they're creating it. So I can't really tell you if, you know, you're more at risk on a cattle farm, except to say that if you have the more animals you have on your property, the more ticks you may also have on your property, because there's more hosts for them, right?
Right. So it is still relative. As you said, it's still relatively new in the research on this. So there's less to go on than we would, you know, sometimes hope for.
Yeah. So we know a lot less than things that we've been looking into for longer, like Lyme disease, for instance.
Exactly. So let's talk about the tick population. I'm sure, you know, this is one of the things that you all monitor throughout your studies, the tick population in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so since we know that it's associated with the Lone Star tick, that's the tick species I'll talk mostly about. But we have the Lone Star tick throughout the southeast central portion of the United States. It seems like it's moving northward and kind of westward as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this tick is a little different than some of the other tick species that are human biters. It's more aggressive, and instead of, you know, waiting on maybe a piece of grass for someone to pass by, it actually seeks out its next host. So it'll move towards hosts. So it's a little different than other ticks. And some people can feel the bite a little more easily, because it is an aggressive biter. And I will say, I can feel these when they bite me, when I've had them on me before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've had them before, and it's almost like I wouldn't call it an outright pain, but it's a definite itch.
No. Yeah, an itch is a good way to describe it. Yeah, it's not like not a pain necessarily, but you can feel them, which is, you know, kind of a good thing, because then we can get them off of us as quickly as possible.
Exactly,
But yeah, we have the Lone Star tick in Kentucky and in West Virginia.
And so, have we seen, you said that they are moving, so what about, like, do you all study population numbers? Are we seeing, like, an exploding number over the last decade? Is it just growing at an exponential rate, or is it, you know, more stagnant, just a steady growth, or what are we looking at?
So that's another question I can't really outright answer, because we don't have a very good baseline on what these populations were in the past. We just know that we're seeing them more often in newer locations and getting more more bite reports from people and on animals. But I can't give you any type of population estimates, unfortunately.
Okay.
We just don't have that type of information.
And, right, right.
It takes a lot to be able to see what the populations are out there.
Oh, absolutely.
But it does seem like, you know, just from talking with people, that there's definitely more tick bites happening.
Okay. And again, that could be a number of reasons. Yeah, that could be more people getting outdoors. That could be growth in the population. But there's more than just one factor that goes into determining that.
Yeah, definitely.
So this, again, may be something you're aware of or maybe not aware of. Are there any efforts underway that you're aware of to curb the tick population? I remember hearing a few years back a rumor about like turkeys getting released or something to help, you know, curb the tick population.
I feel like I've heard that rumor in the past too, and I don't know how well that would help, just because whenever you're using another animal like that for a tick, it's also just providing another food source. But there are a couple efforts that we're trying out. With ticks and really with any pest, it's really important to use multiple different tactics. There's never going to be one silver bullet, right? But
right.
Using a couple different things to kind of get the population down and focusing in on areas where we're spending more time. Again, we're never going to get rid of all the ticks everywhere, right? But if we can focus in on places we're spending more time, or if we're going out hiking, we're wearing, you know, longer layers and using some other behavioral approaches to reduce our tick bites. There is some research looking at using prescribed fire for reducing tick populations. And we have some research going into that in Kentucky at the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources is looking into that. But I think they're just in the initial stages of trying that out.
Okay. So on a personal level, you know, I'm going to go out to the lake this weekend. I'm going to go fishing and I'm going to be off the bank. Mm-hmm. What are the absolute best methods that I can take to protect myself and my family?
Yeah. And so with ticks especially, that's how you want to be thinking, is looking at prevention and how can I change a few things in my behavior to reduce the likelihood that I'll have ticks on me or have bites. So I would recommend, you know, wearing long pants. And you can get those pre-treated with acaricides, going through something like Insect Shield. You can also treat them yourselves using permethrin. It's just this yellow bottle you can get at any kind of gardening store, and you'll treat it yourself. I like to do that with my clothes. It's a bit cheaper than buying them pre-treated. It won't last as long, but it lasts for about 5 washes. So that's pretty good in my book.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll pre-treat my clothes. Yeah, I'll pre-treat them. And then I like to wear DEET or another type of repellent when I'm out and about too, because they work in different ways. Permethrin kills ticks on contact. DEET makes it harder for them to find you, essentially. And it also helps with mosquito bites. That's nice if you'll be out fishing. You want to be, you know, thinking, what can I do to prevent mosquito bites as well? Because they're also kind of a nuisance.
Absolutely. See, I was actually going to ask, because you know, you'd mentioned one method. I was going to ask about DEET, like, you know, Off and Deep mm-hmm. Woods and those other brands, if they were, you know, good, mm-hmm. as effective as they're advertised to be.
Yeah, so they are. Anything that's going to be EPA registered has gone through a lot of different trials at a high standard to make sure that they are effective and they are safe to use. So yeah, anything that's EPA registered, I would definitely recommend.
All right. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't had a chance to cover yet?
Just one other thing is, you know, never do your tick checks. So, you know, wearing your long layers, but then also doing your tick checks while you're out and about and when you get back, and just making sure you remove those critters as quickly as possible.
Well, and one thing that I've seen people do, and since you're a specialist in it, I'll go ahead and ask you, would it be a good idea, say, to, instead of, you know, tossing the tick out or killing it, to say, like, put it in a Ziploc bag with the date? That way, if you were to mm-hmm. develop some sort of a sickness, you've got the parasite there to give to the medical professionals. Is that a thing?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, definitely. So if you find a tick that's been feeding on you, certainly you can put it into some type of Ziploc bag and freeze it, or you can put it into a little vial or prescription pill bottle with ethanol or hand sanitizer that does not have aloe in it, so no hand softening ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, keep that, and if you develop some symptoms, you can take that into your doctor and ask them about how to get that tested for pathogens. In Kentucky, we do have a free service for Kentucky residents where you can send in the tick for pathogen testing. That's at University of Kentucky's Department of Entomology. Our Ready Polly's lab will test them for pathogens. It may not get back to you with information very quickly, but you'll be able to get some information on pathogens that are present in a tick, and also contributes to some community science initiatives to see what kind of pathogens do we have circulating in our tick populations out there.
Absolutely.
I mean, but if you bring it into a medical doctor, they may be able to direct you where to get pathogen testing as well.
Okay, well, that sounds like a really fantastic program with UK because, well, as you said, it allows us to, you know, find out if a tick that bit us has any pathogens, but also it's like an outreach for you all to gather information from around the state as well.
Exactly. So hopefully I can answer some of those questions a little better in the future.
All right. Well, Dr. Hannah, thank you so much for taking the time. Very insightful information on the Lone Star tick and the red meat allergy that's associated. And I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. Have a great one.
Still to come, Tackle Talk. I finally got to test that underwater camera, and we'll talk some custom lures with Mike Maxwell, owner of Mike's Custom Lures. Keep it here with Hook, Line, and Sinker on 1300 and 105.5 The Jock. Border Sporting Goods is your one-stop outdoor sporting goods store. Family-owned and operated for over 40 years. Borders is the Tri-State's number one outlet for Liberty Safes. Proudly made in the USA with a lifetime warranty. A Liberty Safe will protect what's most important to you from theft or fire. Online at BorderSportingGoods.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram at Border Sporting Goods. Border Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky.
Hi, I'm Bob with Drug Emporium. As we're entering the final days of our going out of business sale, everything in the store is now 75% off. Healthy Life Market vitamins and herbs, 75%. WVU and Marshall clothing and gifts, 75%. Carhartt, Skechers, and name brand cosmetics, 75%. American greeting cards, 75% off. We sincerely thank you for supporting us for the last 39 years. GOB license number 1009, 10 and 11R through July 19th.
When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. Nice. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more. You can also find real stories of how people navigated their own mental health challenges. Because once you start to address the problem, you can go so much further. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council. When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. Nice. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more. You can also find real stories of how people navigated their own mental health challenges. Because once you start to address the problem, you can go so much further. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council. When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. Nice. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more. You can also find real stories of how people navigated their own mental health challenges. Because once you start to address the problem, you can go so much further. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Fish on. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
So for Tackle Talk today, I actually want to talk about something that isn't exactly fishing. But don't worry, it's, we'll call it fishing adjacent. Camping. I love the outdoors in general. Of course, I'm, you know, love fishing. I think most of us love the outdoors, or you wouldn't be listening to this show. But a part of that, to me, is camping. I mean, I absolutely love camping. I don't mind tent camping at all. In fact, last October, my oldest son had a Boy Scouts camping weekend at Camp Oyo in Scioto County, Ohio. And at the time, our youngest was too young to be out in the cold. So the boys and Jess slept in the lodge where it was warm. I slept out in the tent in the 30-degree night. And to be quite honest with you, I was very comfortable. I had just a couple of fleece blankets, an air mattress, rolled my jacket into a pillow, and it was absolutely great. So I do. I love camping. But getting a little sidetracked. The reason I bring it up is for Tackle Talk today, I have decided to work on a project at home. About a year ago, a friend of mine gave me a small, I guess you'd call it like a Harbor Freight style little utility trailer, a little 4x6 utility trailer. It was originally my plan to use it as a trailer for our kayaks. And then I ended up kind of evolving that into a plan to do it like a camping rig that I would pull behind my truck, you know, have like a mobile kitchen on it with a Blackstone and camping gear and the kayak rack on top of it. And that was my plan moving forward. And now I've progressed it even more. I've been doing a lot of research, a lot of planning, and I think I want to take it a step further and build a tiny camper with it. Now, if you've seen these, a lot of people are building these like tiny campers, or like little teardrops. You know, instead of going and spending $20,000 on a teardrop camper, they're building one with just a $600 trailer that they get from Harbor Freight. And so it's going to have like a small living quarters, you know, basically big enough to sleep in, and build out a little kitchen off the rear of it with a hatch or a couple, you know, double doors, and have access to the Blackstone and a little sink and cabinets. Now, it's not going to be cheap. By my rough estimates, I'm thinking it's going to cost me right around $1,000, which is expensive, but when you think about it, it's cheaper than buying a $20,000 one by a lot. Because I live on a radio salary, I'm going to have to build it out in phases. But hopefully, I'll be able to get started on it here very soon, and I will be sure to be giving updates about it on here and posting pictures on our website and on Facebook as well, so you can follow along. Moving on with today's show, we've talked the last few weeks about getting the fairer sex out into the great outdoors with programs designed specifically for the ladies. You know, fishing especially, one of those things that's traditionally viewed as a bit of a guy's thing, but more and more women across the country and across the Mountain State are getting outdoors and onto the waters. So we've talked about the OWOA program in Ohio. Last week we talked about the BOW program in Kentucky. Today we're going to learn about the BOW program here in West Virginia. Joining me now, Emily McCabe with the West Virginia DNR. Emily, thank you for taking the time to be on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go ahead and get right to it. Let's talk about the BOW program in West Virginia. Of course, it's the Becoming an Outdoors Woman. What all does the BOW program in West Virginia entail?
So we host two events a year that are our big ones. So we'll do one in the fall and we'll do one in the spring. They range from Friday to Sunday. They're workshops. We host them at state parks so people can come. They stay at the state park, they eat at the state park, and they have all of their classes there on site. And we'll do one in the north of West Virginia, and then we'll do one in the south, so that way people from all areas can come and visit. And then we range our classes from hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation. So we usually have about 20 5 classes we try to keep around that people can pick and choose to go throughout that weekend.
So a very, very good variety of different program, different activities within the program.
Yes.
You said hunting, fishing, and then outdoor recreation. So I assume outdoor recreation is going to include like hiking and camping, things like that.
Yes, it does.
So does your program, or the state's program rather, does it dive into boating any? Because I know Kentucky doesn't focus on boating so much, but Ohio's program puts a very heavy emphasis on boating as well.
We have a few classes that have to do with boating. So last year we did an electrofishing class. Some of our fish biologists came out, they brought their electrofishing boat, and they took some people out and they showed them exactly how they do some research with electrofishing, showed them the types of fish they target, how they work the electrofishing boat, all the type of safety things that go into it. And then they got a few, they actually electrofished, got some fish out, and then showed them how they do their research and data and stuff. And then we do some kayaking classes and tie those in with fishing. And then we also have a boat class where they teach you how to hook up your boat to a truck, back it up, drive it, that kind of thing.
Okay. I have to say the electrofishing actually sounds really cool to me. Like, I'm a little sad that this is a woman's only program, because that's something I would like to see, because I think it's something a lot of people don't really – a lot of people, if they're not into fishing, really don't even know about it, about the research that goes into it and how they conduct that research. So I think that's really cool.
It was a great class.
Looking at the program, when did it begin in West Virginia? Is it fairly new, or has it been going on for several years?
It has been going on for a while. So it was in the state parks area. So they took it over. They had a few different coordinators, and then it kind of died down a little bit. And then recently, within the past couple of years, Wildlife has taken it back up in the DNR, and we've started getting it going, kind of revamped it a little bit, got some new merch classes, and it's been going really well and steady for the past couple of years. So,
all right, so it's growing for sure.
Yes.
Okay, and the activities, you know, we said there's several. Are these going to be for beginners, or are there going to be classes for the more experienced folks? Or are they going to be an in-between? What are we looking at on skill level?
So a lot of our classes are for beginners. We do offer a few that are, like, if you have done it a few times and you want to really hone in on your, if you're hunting or you're fishing, or if you want to do backpacking or something, if you've done it a few times, we mainly focus on people who have that beginner sort of level rather than expert. So we do some things called Beyond Bow events. They're usually just like a one day throughout the year, and that's more honing in on a certain skill. So we did this one's a little bit different because it was a couple days, but we did a backpacking trip at Seneca Rocks.
Okay.
And that was more aimed towards like expert, but the workshops that we host twice a year are usually just like beginner, and then if you've done it a few times and you just want to get a little bit better at it, feel more comfortable, that's the type of skill we usually gear for.
And see, I think that's really cool, because in talking with Ohio and Kentucky. See, Ohio has one event, and it's a big, long weekend event where they go to a lodge.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky, they have 3 events throughout the year, but they don't do any smaller events. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like West Virginia has the 2 main events, but then several smaller events throughout the year that may be for a little more advanced along the skill path.
Yes, exactly.
That, see, to me, that sounds like the way that these programs ought to be executed, is both for the beginners, but also you follow up and you have more events throughout the year that's a little more advanced. I think that's really fantastic. So how would you say, actually, I wanted to ask real quick before I forget, what's the cost associated with the event?
So for the workshops, it varies if you... Some people live close, so they don't want to stay at the park. But if you're staying and you want a roommate, it's usually about like $225. And then if you're wanting to stay at the park but stay in a single room, it is a little bit more expensive. And that usually comes out to about around $500.
Okay, so it's not outside of the – it's not, you know, astronomically high, but there is an investment involved.
Right. Yeah, because even though you're coming you're paying for your classes, you're paying for your lodging, your food, and we also provide mainly all of the gear. There's a few things that we recommend some people bring, but you're never expected to come and bring something to be able to take the class. So you're getting a lot of bang for your buck.
Absolutely. That's actually one of the things I mentioned with the Ohio and their program. Excuse me. They're kind of the same way, where it's over one weekend, and the fee associated goes towards their lodging and goes towards their meals and goes towards the gear and everything needed for the activities. So it really, whenever you think about taking like a weekend vacation or even a day trip, and the money you're going to spend in food and gas and lodging and, you know, gear, and it really kind of balances out.
Yes, it does.
So when are the events? You said there's two a year. Are the spring and fall, or?
Yes, so we do. We try to stick around for the spring, the first weekend in May, and then the last weekend of September for fall. This past spring was a little bit different, just with the state parks. It was also busy already. So it was in April this year, but our fall is September 26th to the 28th at Kinane Valley Resort. And we're sticking around with those dates, so that way people kind of know what to expect. Okay. And can plan for that ahead of time.
Is signups available for the fall one already, or is there a sign-up window?
We're not going to release registration until a little bit closer to time, probably 2 months before, just so that way we can get everything finalized, because whenever you're signing up is whenever you're signing up for your classes and your roommates and paying for everything. So that way, if we need to change anything or fix anything, add classes, it's not going to be confusing for the participants. It's just everything's done, finalized, and then they can sign up and be ready to go.
Right. Everything's organized and ready to go, and they don't have to worry about it. You know, not enough people signed up for this, so we're, you know, not enough people signed up for this, so we're going to have to cancel this. And it's all finalized and ready for them to sign up. So you're saying 2 months before, folks are going to want to look for it probably sometime around July.
Yeah, I would say either July, probably second weekend is whenever we're going to shoot for that.
And so can women from out of state participate, or is this for West Virginia residents only?
No, anyone can come. We've had people from Kentucky, Maryland, Maine. I've had someone from Texas and Florida before. So as long as you can get there, everyone's welcome.
Awesome. See, and that's West Virginia, Kentucky were the same way. They accept... Ohio and Kentucky, the same way they accept folks from all over. Is there a limited number of spaces, or is this just, you know, open for anybody that's able to come?
We do have a limited amount of spaces. We usually cap at about 75, just because of the blocking at the state parks and everything. But also, that's a lot of people and a lot of classes. So for right now, we're keeping it at 75, but hopefully we can make that bigger in the future as Bo continues to grow.
Okay. Well, is there anything that we've not touched on yet that you would like for folks to know about before we wrap up today?
Yeah, we actually have a Beyond Bo event coming up on June 7th. It's a Saturday. It's a fishing float trip on the South Branch of Potomac River. So we're going to go up there around 9:30 in the morning. And we have sign-ups for this already out. And then we're going to float down and fish, chit-chat, have a good time, and then get out maybe 6 hours later. So if anyone's interested in that, we do have our registration up on our Facebook page.
Okay, so the Facebook page is where they're going to want to get the info on that.
Yeah, that's where we put most of our stuff. The DNR will post our big workshops, but our Facebook page is just WV, Becoming an Outdoors Woman. The picture is just our logo, and you can just ask to join that, and then the sign up for that is in there. And then we also keep everyone up to date on things that maybe Bo's not doing, but some participants are going to do. There was a lady in there one time. She wanted to go deer hunting. Mm-hmm. She didn't have anybody to go with, so she put in that Facebook group, and then a bunch of them got together and they went deer hunting. So it's good for a bunch of different types of things.
Okay, so it's One of the things that they touched on with the other states, and I know I keep going back to them, but I see a common theme. It's a commonality is that they really, it's more than just an activity or a getaway. They're building a community with this, and that's kind of what you all have done with the Facebook group, too.
Yeah, so I like to keep everybody connected as much as possible because they really do make good friends because you're spending all this time with people, and then we have activities after dinner that aren't mandatory or a class, just like if you wanted to do s'mores. And people have been friends for years because they met at Bo, and it's really cool to see them get out and actually do stuff outside of Bo, just them. Because that's the whole reason people come to Bo, is they want to do something like squirrel hunt, but they don't have anyone in their family who squirrel hunts or know anybody. So they come here, and then they meet like-minded people. So that's another huge goal of ours, is just getting people comfortable, confident, and then also making friends going out and doing things that they've always wanted to do.
Absolutely. I don't know if I've asked this yet, but what is there a minimum age to sign up?
Yes, we do have a minimum just for insurance purposes. It's 18 plus.
18 plus, okay. All right. And, of course, folks can get all that info on, there's info on the DNR.gov, the WVDNR.gov website.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, as you said, there's that Facebook group as well.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Well, Emily, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. The program sounds absolutely amazing, and I bet it's going to grow just tons over the next few years because we see more and more women getting outdoors and doing these activities and having fun and showing that, you know, it's not just a boys' club. This is for the ladies. This is for everybody. You know, our natural resources are some of the best in the country, and it's for everybody to enjoy.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and you have a wonderful afternoon. A big thanks once again to Emily for joining the show today and talking about the West Virginia Bow Program. Still to come today, we're going to be talking about the second annual Appalachian Fly Fishing Festival. It's coming up next weekend in Thomas, West Virginia. I got one of the event organizers, Tyler Waldo, to tell me all about it. We'll talk with him next on Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock. Border Sporting Goods, family owned and operated for over 40 years, is the one-stop shop for all your fishing needs. Borders has the largest selection in the tri-state from all the major brands like Shimano, G. Loomis, Abu Garcia, Blue Rock Custom Tackle, Rapala, Netbait, Strike King, and more. Let the experts at Borders help you find the perfect fishing gear for your next adventure. Border Sporting Goods, 5876 US Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky, and online at BordersSportingGoods.com.
From the local 2U studio, connecting West Virginia, this is the Valley Sports Station, 105.5 and 98.3 FM, 1300 and 1340 AM, The Jock.
I pick up litter at the neighborhood park.
I volunteer at my local food bank.
I help build homes in my community.
No matter where you are in West Virginia, there's always a chance to be kind. That's because every mountaineer is a volunteer. Help us make a difference during the National Day of Service on September 11th. Visit volunteer.wv.gov to find an opportunity near you. Brought to you by Volunteer West Virginia, the West Virginia Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Here's comedians and Skechers getting comfortable, presented by Hands Free Skechers Slip-Ins.
Hey, I'm Bobby Slayton, and I'm here with my pal, comedian, and Skechers ambassador, Mr. Howie Mandel.
Why did it take so long to invent something as amazing as Slip-Ins? I know it seems simple, but it took Skechers to invent a better pair of shoes.
Yep, with Skechers Slip-Ins, you just step it and go. You don't have to touch your shoes. And by the way, Slip-Ins are for the whole family, men, women, and kids, in all your favorite Skechers styles. Find Skechers Slip-Ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be. So we asked kids, what do you want your parents to hear?
I feel sometimes that I'm not listened to. I would just want you to listen to me more often and evaluate situations with me and lead me towards success.
We're not adults, so just be there and, like, listen. I just want someone to yap to. And I just feel like I'll be fine, like, if someone just hears me talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk.
You're doing a really good job. And I don't think I tell you that enough. And I know sometimes we get into it and it's just hard on both of us. But, you know, try to understand me more and I'll try to do the same.
Listening is a form of love.
Find resources to help you support your kids and their emotional well-being at soundedouttogether.org. That's soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal.
Sometimes as dads, I think we're too hard on ourselves. We get down on ourselves on not being able to, you know, we're the providers, but we also have to learn to take care of ourselves. Arapaho way, you got to pray for yourself as well as for everybody else, but never forget yourself. Self-love made me a better dad because I realized my worth.
Never stop being a dad. That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer, maybe yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
Fish on. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
Today's show brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. You can find them on US 60 in Ashland, Kentucky. They're your one-stop shop for all of your hunting and fishing needs. Let Borders help you get outdoors and find them online, BordersSportingGoods.com. So back in episode 5, I talked with Kentucky Fishing Game about their Master Angler and Trophy Fish program. And most states these days have a Master Angler or a Trophy Fish program of some sorts. West Virginia, of course, has one, the Master Angler program. In fact, last week I talked with Carson Schock, who was the youngest person in West Virginia to earn the title of Master Angler. And he gave me some details of the program and kind of details on what it takes to accomplish, get the title. But today I'm talking with David Wellman with the West Virginia DNR to learn more about it. David, thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome, Cam. Thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get right into it. Talk to me about the Master Angler program. You know, what exactly is it for folks who may not be aware of it?
Sure, yeah. This is a program that we began back in 2022, so it's been around just for a few years. It's really just one of the ways that we have to promote fishing and recognize anglers for some of the accomplishments that they have over the years. To be able to become a master angler, you need to have quite a bit of dedication. It takes quite a bit of energy, because our master angler program is made up of what we call different fishing slams, and those slams are essentially organized by different fish species, such as a black bass, catfish, panfish, and a few others. We have a total of 6 slams, and to be able to qualify for each one of the slams, you need to catch each one of the species within that slam. It's got to meet the minimum lengths, and all has to be done within one calendar year. And you can qualify for, again, what we consider to be a fish slam. Now, if you qualify for all 6 slams, that allows you to be considered the master angler within our program.
And the slams, you said there's 6 of them, and of course each one's going to be one, we'll say, species or one subspecies of fish. And you have 1 year, I believe it is, to complete that slam. They all have to be done within, per slam, that calendar year. But as far as the Master Angler program, do you have to have all the slams within 1 year, or can that be over a lifetime?
No, that's over a lifetime, and it's just a one-time award. The Master Angler is just a one-time award. So you can take the time, if you want do it over 6 years, what have you, for the master angler, you're more welcome to do that. Like I said, takes a lot of energy, a lot of dedication, and also quite a bit of know-how to be able to accomplish this feat. It's pretty impressive when folks do it. I'm always kind of amazed talking with folks that get out and actually do this, because, like I said, it does take a level of dedication that a lot of fishermen, oftentimes just don't have the time to commit for it.
Right.
So it's
So what's the verification process? You know, how do they check these fish in to get them added towards their slam and added towards the master angler title?
Okay. Well, what they need to do is when they catch these different species, as I mentioned, there's a minimum length limit. For instance, if you're looking at a black bass slam, you need to catch the largemouth, smallmouth, and spotted bass. They all have a minimum length limit of 12 inches, right? And so what we need when you apply for one of these slams, you need to provide an application that you can get off a website, or if someone calls us, we can always email that to them as well, too, or mail it through the mail. And then when they complete their application, they need to also be able to provide us a picture of them with the fish so that we can actually identify the fish and make sure that it's correct. These photographs, they have to be time stamped as well, too, showing the date and the time that they caught those fish. And that's really about all there is to it.
So as far as like the measurement of the fish, we just take the angler's word on it. You don't need it to be like in a measuring tray or a ruler held up to it, anything like that.
Well, it helps if you do have a measuring tape laying there, or if you do have some type of tray that you put them in. And oftentimes that's what we get. I do not believe that it's actually required for that. You know, you can look at some fish and you can tell, yeah, that's going to make it. But it certainly does help. And a lot of folks that are trying to achieve this feat, they do take tape measures with them, and quite honestly, it does help us if the measurements are recorded in a photograph.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a requirement, but it is immensely helpful if folks will do that and will help towards the verification of their catch.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Also, just real quick, this is for public waters only. Private don't qualify for this.
Gotcha. And so we are talking about length. Weight doesn't play a factor in the Master Angler program?
That's correct, because what we would end up having to have is, if weight were a factor in it, they would have to be on a certified scale. There's a couple issues with that. One, it's become increasingly difficult to find a nearby store or tackle shop or whatever that actually has certified scales. And then oftentimes, you know, folks want to practice catch and release. And if you need to take those fish away from the river or lake that they're caught, by the time you get them somewhere to be weighed and get them back to the river, they're going to die on them.
Right.
So we just require the length.
So I know in the state of Kentucky, whenever you, they don't have slams per se, but they do have different, they have a list of fish and a minimum size on, you know, minimum length on each fish. And whenever you accomplish one in the state of Kentucky, they'll give you like a little patch, a little sticker, a little certificate. Does the West Virginia do anything like that per slam?
We do, yeah. We have a couple different things. Again, we have the Fish Slam program that rolls right into the Master Angler program. And when you achieve any of those, we send you a certificate at the end of the year. For whichever species that you may have qualified for, or for a master angler, we'll be able to send you a nice certificate for that. We also have what we call a trophy fish citation program, which is somewhat similar, but different than what our master angler program is. And it's been around for decades. And sort of the same thing, except just for individual fish. For instance, you know, whether it's brook, brown, rainbow trout, largemouth, smallmouth, whatever, we have minimum lengths for that as well, too. And if you happen to catch a fish that equals those minimum lengths or greater than the minimum lengths, fill an application, you can qualify for a trophy fish citation as well. And that's the same thing. You'll receive a certificate at the end of the year. They're really nice certificates. The fish that are portrayed on those certificates are by an artist, Tomarelli, And they're really nice artwork. So that's what we send out to the folks that qualify for the Trophy Fish Citation Program.
And so for the Trophy Fish and the Master Angler, are you awarding, you said the end of the year, so mm-hmm. do you only award these once per year at the end of the year, or is it something that's reviewed every month that they then issue the award?
Well, the Master Angler program, we will review a little bit more often. Excuse me. If someone qualifies for a slam, we'll try to get those out whenever they apply. Now, the Trophy Fish Citation Program is a little bit different, because the way the citation programs work is an angler will receive one certificate at the end of the year with all of the fish that they had collected, because oftentimes you'll have anglers that will receive, you know, multiple, sometimes dozens of citation fish each year. And so instead of sending out multiple certificates throughout the year, we just wait till the end of the year and we include all the citations on one certificate. We send those out December or January of the following year.
And so let's say I catch a bass, mm-hmm. a largemouth, and it meets the requirements of both the Trophy Fish Citation and my slam for black bass. Can that one fish go towards both, or will I need to catch separate fish in order to get those?
No, that's a great question, but it can go towards both.
Oh, that's awesome. Certainly.
Yeah, for instance, so if you catch a largemouth bass that is, say, 21 inches, which is the minimum length for a trophy fish citation, you can certainly apply that to your bass slam. But in the bass slam, the largemouth bass minimum length is only 12 inches.
Gotcha. So it makes it a little more attainable as far as minimum size requirement on the slams versus the trophy fish citations.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
So another question I had, see, I live in the state of Kentucky, but I fish, I have my West Virginia out of resident license. I fish West Virginia regularly. Can I submit for the trophy fish citation or the Master Angler program being an out-of-state resident?
Absolutely, yes, sir. As long as you're a licensed angler, you can qualify for those. You bet. We'll be happy to send someone a Master Angler certificate that lives in Kentucky or any other surrounding state. You bet.
Awesome. Well, David, I appreciate you taking the time to talk today. Is there anything else that we haven't covered on yet that you would like folks to know about?
No, sir. I think we covered both of those programs pretty well. I would encourage folks, if they do have more questions, feel free to give any of our officers a call, ask to talk to one of the fisheries biologists. They'll be able to explain any of these programs as well as where to fish and give some advice out there. So feel free to give us a call at any time.
Absolutely. I agree. You know, I've been doing this show for a little bit now, and I've reached out to the West Virginia DNR several times. I've had several folks on for interviews. You guys are always just the most helpful, most informative folks. You guys have it down, and I really appreciate everything you guys do.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you very much. That's very much appreciated.
Well, man, again, thank you so much for taking the time today, and maybe we'll get to talk again soon.
I hope so.
Miss part of today's show? Listen again and catch past shows on the podcast at WJYPAM.com and on the Jock mobile app. This has been Hook, Line, and Sinker with Cam Connors, brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods on the Jock.
You said you'd never buy your kid candy from the checkout aisle or forget extra diapers and never give in to a meltdown. You'd never lick your thumb to clean their face, never let them have too much screen time, and never bribe them for just one more bite. You say you'd never let them out in public without their hair brushed, never ever become a minivan mom, and you'd never give them your phone for a quiet dinner.
Calling boss, work phone.
So when you say you'd never leave your child in a hot car, no, it can happen. Cars get hot fast, and kids can be at risk in temperatures as low as 60 degrees Fahrenheit. never happens. Before you leave the car, always stop, look, lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, everything okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
Honey. Hey, I'm here for you. Tell me about school today.
When kids can't find the right words, music can help them sound it out. Talk to the kids in your life about their emotional well-being. Find tools and resources at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Let's put out this campfire.
Dad, Smokey Bear said to.
Brown it with water, then stir with a shovel and repeat until cool.
Wow, where can I learn all this?
It's all on SmokeyBear.com because only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Be green and make some green. At Metal Center Recycling, we're a vital part of the supply chain. We help put resources back into the economy. Instead of mining raw materials, we can use what we already have. From recycling your cans to scrap metal and more, just bring them to Metal Center Recycling and get fair and honest prices offered for your stuff. Check out themetalcenter.com. Metal Center Recycling, James River Turnpike just past the Pumpkin Park in Milton, and in Huntington just past the flood wall on Route 2.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
It's what we were taught, trained, and told to do.
It could be for anything, helping a friend move.
Listening to a fellow veteran for hours, at any hour of the day.
Or just simply making time for people. A neighbor, a loved one, or even a stranger.
We're often the first to help others. There's no question about it.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
Perhaps it's time to do for yourself what you would do for others.
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
What you decide, don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
They said
if I got drunk,
if I did coke,
I'd be one of the guys.
They said meth would help me get through my exams.
They said synthetic drugs would give me a safe high.
He said he'd love me forever if I smoked crack with him.
They lied.
Find out the truth about drugs.
Drugfreeworld.org.
From the local 2U studio,
all systems go.
Connecting West Virginia, this is the Valley Sports Station, 105.5 and 98.3 FM, 1300 and 1340 AM, The Jock.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer, maybe yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
I'm a pretty great multitasker. I can wash dishes and do laundry.
I can roller skate while walking my dog.
I can even order lunch while doing my homework. But I can't use my phone while driving. A distracted driver is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. So when it comes to driving, please, don't be a multitasker.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand up to cancer and rally wants you to reduce.